The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. This is Brent and Lydia talk Starman.
Starman, Brent.
This is our 18th episode where we talk about issue number 17. As always, this is brought to you by Comics League International.
Woo!
Yeah. How you doing, Lydia?
I'm great, but it's typhoon season in Japan, so I'm sleepy.
You know, and the days of having rain and cold, and then the next day having just balmy weather, humid, yeah. Humid. I almost said like mushiatsu, and I was like, no, we're doing this in English now. Humid. Have got me a nice little fever. I don't think it'll affect the recording. My pauses might be a little longer than normal, but you know, I call that charm. Charm.
Nice. It's a hot kind of charm.
I'm going to choose to interpret that as attractive and not like temperature. So thank you.
No problem. By the way, what's the Fahrenheit equivalent of a fever temperature?
I think it's like 98.6.
I see. It sounds a lot more serious when it's in Fahrenheit.
Yeah, like still, I have to, after 12 years of, like, living here in Japan and using Celsius, I still don't remember what a fever is.
Really?
And so, like the other day, last night, I was just kind of talking to the missus. I was like, oh, yeah, I feel slightly warm, but don't worry. It's only like 37.7, so it's nothing to worry about. She's like, that's a fever. I'm like, really? I thought it was like 38 something. She's like, no, over 37 for adults, that's a fever. I was like, oh. Yeah. Oh, then I have a fever. You should probably worry. Let's get some tongues. Bah. And she said no.
Oh, I'm sorry you have a fever, but I know what you mean. 37.7 is not so. Yeah, I don't have experience with Fahrenheit because I've never lived in a country that uses Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
But the other day I opened up my weather app and for some reason the geological location thingy wasn't on. So it was all in Fahrenheit. And I was like, I do not understand the weather. I can't tell what's happening tomorrow because everything was in Fahrenheit. So
yeah,
it looked very serious because all the temperatures were above 70 and I was like, I don't understand.
What's strange for me is I'm at the point where I can kind of understand like, oh, it's Celsius and it's, you know, 25. I know what type of weather that kind of means. And it's in Fahrenheit. And I know that it's, you know, 83, and I kind of know what that weather means. I have no idea how those two numbers relate. It's
interesting.
Yeah, like my parents ask me, oh, you say it's 25 degrees. What does that mean for us? I'm like, let me go to Google and answer you that way. So I feel like you were dissing on my fever. I should point out, it's gone up a point. It's gone up. Mm-hmm. Whole degree, 38.7. Still rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
You know.
I wonder, in the universe of Starman,
yes,
whether there are these kind of things, like, you know, these discrepancies. But Opal City is in the US, right?
Yes.
Okay.
You mean like the Fahrenheit and Celsius?
Yeah, or even like a whole new, what do you call it, scale? You know, because, you know, Mikal is from another planet and stuff like that. I'd like to find out things like that, if if any of the creators you are watching, I don't know, let me know. I really
Yeah,
want
like
to find
what
out.
would like I'm just thinking about Grundy and Mikhail
Yeah,
now
me too.
talking about the weather.
I know, right?
It's got to be
That
like,
I know,
and then if
what would
Dr.
it be?
Phosphorus shows up, like, how hot does it have to be for Dr. Phosphorus to be like, man, it's really muggy today?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really want, I like that idea about, you know, that scene in the previous story arc where Mikhail and Grundy, they were like looking up at the sky and stuff like that. I really want to hear someone write a fanfic or something about like them talking about the weather and having like trouble trying to figure out what it's like to explain temperature to someone else. Yeah. Ah, we are such nerds. Oh
Of course, we're not nerds. Now to talk about the latest issue. Well, not latest, but our next issue of Starman.
Yes.
But yeah, no, that I'm like, I don't have anything more to add to the weather discussion other than going like, yeah. It almost feels like the hijinks write itself.
Yes. Oh, it's amazing. All right. So I guess now is the time for us to do this very awkward transition into what happened on the in the month that issue 17 was published.
Yeah, the
So
cover date of March 96.
March 96. So that's I was in primary two. Yeah. Okay. I know I said I had one thing, but I just realized that there was another thing. There's this in Singapore as well. There was this huge uproar about the mad cow disease, and on the 20th of March in 1996, the UK admitted humans can catch mad cow disease. Yeah, it was, but you know, to an 8-year-old, it was really like, whoa, there's a cool disease out there called mad cow disease. I was primary two, so that was really one of the first, what do you call it, instances, I guess, where I first grasped this idea of there being a panic, you know, of any disease. Like, for, I don't know, I was 8, so that was, I remember this very, very clearly. Like, there was the first disease, like this first, you know, now we have Zika and we talk about, you know, I guess there are a lot of STDs as well, but I mean, when it comes to like for kids, that was my first brush with news like that. So that really left an impression.
See
Yeah, so that.
that's great because my like main recollection of the mad cow outbreaks are on the complete like almost other end of the spectrum. Because it was and of course there was like I totally understand everything you were saying, but the memory that stands out was I was watching some news program. And like after about like 20 minutes of detailing the horrors of mad cow and how easy it would be to get it from tainted beef, and what this is going to do to the global meat economy, they just did like a little tag on the end of shifting like a local eatery. I don't know. And it was this couple who were easily in their 70s, and they interviewed them like, yeah, they say it takes, on average, a couple of decades to catch it. We're eating steak. Like, it's cheap, and we're most likely going to be dead before any real symptoms emerge, even if we get it. Give me another steak. And that's like my main memory of Mad Cow, of like, wow, old people get cheap steak.
Oh wow. Okay, but that very America, I guess, I don't know.
Well, but the couple were in the UK, so I mean,
Oh
oh,
really?
posh, I
Okay.
suppose steak is a terrible thing to waste. That's my bad UK accent.
I see. Okay, good for them then. But okay. I don't know. I don't want to. I wouldn't imagine at any age being, you know, keen to die of any kind of disease like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not the best way to
No,
go.
no.
Yeah. But on the same day, on the 20th of March, Eric and Lyle Menendez were found guilty of killing their parents. So today's, you know, two entries, mad cow disease and dying, and you know, it's all about this. I'm very dark today. Eric and Lyle Menendez, they were 21 and 19, I think, at the time of the murder. I don't know, when I saw this, I was like, why did it get onto the website? Why did it deserve special mention? And then I went to Wikipedia it, and it was really like, whoa, one of those like dramatic murder stories, I think. Yeah, but it was really horrible. It's like they killed their parents, they shot their parents, and then they went to watch a movie so that they could create an alibi. And then after that, you know, in the first 6 months as orphans, they spent like $1 million on, you know, gallivanting and stuff like that. And I was like, how? I don't know. But I can imagine it really caused an uproar in the US, you know, where
It
when they were found guilty. And I guess when they were found guilty, it was a couple of years after the crime. Yeah. Do you remember this?
I do. I don't remember the details, but I remember I remember hearing about the killings, and they were certainly sensationalized. I mean, during that time, yeah, I mean, they were I mean, we didn't have reality TV at the state that it is now. But I mean, to say that these two were upgraded to like minor celebrity status due to being, eventually proven guilty, but accused murderers, I think is fair to say. I think part of it had to do with, I mean, here were two kids who, well, I mean, 19 and 21, but kids, who looked very clean cut and, very, very mild. And then they just did, horrible things. And I mean, memory is a tricky thing. But my memory just paints it as, a very grisly murder. And that throughout the trial, the Menendez boys were very cold, very, very emotionless is how I remember it. And I mean, take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, I see. Oh, I mean, when you read about things like that, you know, about murders and death and disease, you suddenly realize that, you know, fiction is not that far from the truth. You know, and even things that happen in Starman, like we'll discuss in, oh, but that's, I think, next issue. Oh, but then we've covered the previous story arc. Yeah, so, you know, murders and things that happen in Opal is actually not that. It's maybe even milder than real life. I mean, the Mist and his family seem quite close-knit for Nash to, you know, take revenge for her brother and become the new Mist because of her brother. So you can't imagine them killing their parents. But in real life, it's not the case. There are people like, you know, like that. And I don't know. It's
Well,
sorry.
like, I mean, I think like all college students, I've taken like an intro to, I think, creative writing and like, intro to screen theory or film studies or such like that. In a lot of those classes, I remember them talking about how in most cases,
money alone will hardly ever work as a motivation for a villain. You know, audiences tend to disbelieve like solely money influences. Which, you know, when you think about the Menendez parents, because I don't remember any proven instances of like child abuse or anything like that. You know, I remember it being like, in the end, this was a murder that was, we want your money. You have a lot of it and we don't have it, so we want to kill you to get it. So it's, you know, if we think about the missed crimes, she did steal money, but her motivations for those crimes were esteem and power and to get something back for her father. So money was just a byproduct.
Right, deep. We're having a very deep conversation that we should shift to the comic itself.
Then, in which case, I will tell you that, come on, turn on digital copy. So, you know, yeah, that's the thing, is I do have all these on omnibuses, but when I'm just going to sit in front of the mic and do it, an omnibus is really hard to wield. So just having a little digital copy on the iPad, so nice. So, issue number 17, Beyond Sins, as it says on the cover, and that was cover date March of 96. Here is my synopsis.
Okay.
So we start with a prologue that also serves as kind of a tie-in to the past five issues, where the Miss Baddies are killing and kidnapping and planning more when they are set on by a pirate! It's not just any old pirate, it's a ghost pirate. Ooh. And we're given our first taste of John Valor, the black pirate. It's a lot of pirate. this kind of wraps up, and then we get a kind of a morning after scene between Jack and the hereto unknown Lucy. And Lucy is saying, Jack, telling Jack the big bye-bye. It's kind of you, and I've got better things to do with my life than deal with your immaturity. And next we swivel to Ted, where he monologues on the past sins of Grundy and the complications that makes for this current incarnation of Grundy, and those feelings, the kind of that difference promotes in him. Oh, and by the way, Michael is talking, like complete sentences talking.
In English.
So then we cut to Jack, who is talking to Charity and getting his fortune told. And, you know, after kind of a, hey, baby, you want to get with this? And she's like, no. And he's like, oh, well, then I guess you want to, like, hang out? Because I'm actually kind of lonely. And she says, yeah, sure, you're not, you know, yeah, we can be friends. Then we get a very brief scene of Shade and the younger O'Dares planning some derings do. And then, you know, Jack gets a haircut and talks about his business. Clarence gets a promotion. Opal City, the new commissioner, decides which way they need to swing with Starman. And then we get our big ol' action sequence. I guess our second action sequence of the issue. And in that action sequence, Matt and the Shade get sucked into the demon poster.
Ooh, dun, dun, dun. Bah, 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 bah.
Yeah, and that's my synopsis of this issue.
Nice.
Yeah, it was kind of, and I certainly don't mean this in a bad way, it was kind of all over the place.
Yeah. It's like it went back to what Starman is supposed to be. I don't know if I'm saying that. My impression of Starman is like this. It's like this.
Are you doing a gesture? Because
yeah,
because this is an audio.
No. It's like I'm talking about like this issue. It's all over the place. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
So many little events happening. So that's what I like about Starman. There are many issues. Before the previous arc, I think that I had all these seemingly disconnected events. Mm-hmm. Remember, like, the one with the Hawaiian shirt and stuff mm-hmm. like that? So, you know, back then. But, so this was a nice refresher for me. Yes. I really liked it, yeah.
Yes. And not to, you know, jump too far ahead to the summation, but I like how this follows up on the promise of Sins of the Child, and that it kind of shows, like, yeah, we've now expanded Jack's world and really hung a flag on these formerly minor characters are now important, and mm-hmm. that this issue really follows up on, like, no, you know, even Clarence O'Dair is important. Charity mm-hmm. is important. These are people mm-hmm. who, in Jack's world, are important, just as the whole setting of Opal is mm-hmm. important to Starman.
Mm-mm. Mm. Cool. Yeah. Thank you for the synopsis.
Oh, thank you. What did you think of the cover?
Ah! I like it. When I first saw it, I was like, is this Tony Harris? And then I had to check with the what do you call it, the signature on the cover.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's like ethereal, it's very, but it's Charity, right? It has to be.
Yeah.
It didn't look like her, that's why I was kind of like thrown off. Yeah, but I really liked, I liked it because of its mystery. It's what's this word? I don't know. This, you know how the fantasy, I guess. Mm. I like the whole touch of, I mean Starman is very, it's very fictionalized, but
yeah
to have this touch, this, you know, like the way you and I, who aren't in the world of Starman, understand fantasy and supernatural, you know, this tarot-ish scene. Yeah, I like it. It's very relatable.
Did you said ethereal?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's the word that keeps popping into my head as well, and I think that really just nails it.
Mm.
It feels somehow smoky.
Mm.
And yeah, he does a great job of making just, hey, here's your card, seem mysterious.
Mm.
And I don't know if it's the whirling smoke in the background, but is nice.
Yeah, and I think why I was kind of thrown off, and I doubt whether it was Tony Harris or not, is because so far, I think, on the covers, there's only been usually one style of art. But over here, because, you know, Charity's like real, quote unquote, whereas the cards are, you know, printed on paper, so there's this line drawing feel to them.
Yeah.
And that's very pronounced in the picture. So mm-hmm. that the two styles, the contrast of the two styles, the slightly realism-ish Charity and the cat, and the very what are these pictures called? They're just, you know, drawings on the cards that I like the contrast very much. It's very, very, very obvious that these are cards. Like, these are not part of the picture. Yeah.
The mixture between, and, you know, I wish I'd studied more art rather than just intro to writing and stuff like that, but the mixture of what looks painted and what looks, like you said, done with just, you know, pen and ink and pencil, really, really works here.
Yes. Yeah, so I like it so much. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we going to talk about the words on the cards?
I don't know. What do you... you know, I think it's neat. I do and kind of go through periods where I'm like, I need to you know, learn how to do tarot cards, because I think they're neat as, like, archetypes. And it's been long enough since I've last cracked open a book where I can't quite remember what they all mean. But part of me, like, whenever I see kind of tarot cards used in media, does mm-hmm. that's kind of make me go kind of think, like, how many of these are actually representative of mm-hmm. what the meaning of the cards are supposed to be, rather than just like, hey, star man, star, mm. there we go.
Yeah. I don't have much knowledge about tarot cards, but I was just trying to identify who were on the cards.
Oh, gotcha.
So, I'm guessing the first one, the temperance one, is Michael?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Michael?
I think it's Michael. I mean,
okay. And then the mist? Is that the mist? Fool.
Yeah, I think I took it more as Grundy.
Oh, all right. It's white.
Yeah. And okay. He's got that kind of like a bit more of the hooked nose that I've been thinking about with Grundy.
Ah, okay. Yeah, it makes sense then. I was thinking, why did they revive the mist? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and then it's Hermit is Ted.
Mm, that's what I thought too.
Mm. Justice, I can't tell. Clarence?
Yeah, Justice has been really hard for me. I can't quite tell if he's trying to say it's Clarence or even if it's supposed to be Barry or Mason.
Oh. Yeah, I wonder if he was blindfolded on purpose.
Mm.
You know, to throw us off.
Yeah. I mean, with the events of the issue kind of leans me towards, well, Clarence is the most elevated of the family, so maybe, but I can't say for sure.
Mm. And then we have I keep forgetting his name.
Matt.
Okay.
Good old Scalp Hunter.
Scalp Hunter. Oh, was that a spoiler? Okay, never mind.
Well, you have a spoiler for a few more pages.
Yeah. True. We'll go into that. And then finally we have the Shade, my favorite.
Yeah.
Magician. Okay. So I'm excited to enter this issue because of what happens at the end. So let's go.
let's dive into it.
Mm.
Alright. Page one.
Mm.
Right away, it's one thing I noticed, and I think you're even saying, like, eh, you don't have to look at it this much. Maybe I'm misremembering. But I do think more care was put into making the Chinese characters look a little bit less generic.
Mm-mm-mm.
So I appreciated that.
Yeah. It does look like you're very... I wouldn't say stereotypical, but you will find fonts like these in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So, we have a lot of Chinese fonts. It's a lot of fun. And I think for them to have replicated them like this in, you know, with pen, it's very cool.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
What's happening though? Oh, this arc though. This bit of the story is not really connected, but I enjoyed it.
Yes.
You can really feel like these villains are slimy and horrible people. But
yeah.
I'm guessing they're part of the crime wave. Right?
Yeah.
They're dressed in those like Nash / the Mist uniforms, right?
Mm. Yeah, kind of like a flashback to, like, by the way, here's some events that also happened during the last five issues that we just didn't show you until now.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what are we going to talk about for this? Let's see.
Yeah, with this, you know, again, we've got characters that look very distinguishable. From the people around him. Good for keeping that up. And because this whole sequence is only, what, 1, 2, 3 pages, I think they do a great job of kind of going through this with an economy of space.
Mm.
Things don't feel rushed by any means, but there's definitely a like, okay, how can we go ahead and set this up where we've got two bad guys who are still somewhat like distinguishable from each other. So we have a bad guy and a worse guy. We have a victim, and we have the threat of more crime, and just, you know, in one page, especially Longhair. Oh, yeah. He's very hateable.
Yeah.
And then, you know, yeah. I guess if you got stuff for the first page?
Not much, except, you know, horrible people trying to take advantage of a little girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, yeah, the next page, we get the pirate who, you know, I think this is another nice little thing because he looks very... He looks like he could be a villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But right away, we're shown him getting rid of the bad people.
Mm. And saving the nice, innocent little girl.
Yeah.
Yes. But I special mention to that sound effect at the end of the page. Squeak. I love how in comics you can get away with stuff like that.
Mm.
You know, injecting onomatopoeia into your text like that. Because if this were a book, it will not work.
Yeah. Just writing out schlich.
Yeah, if this were a novel. That's why I like it. I like this whole... The more... I've said this so many times, but the more I read comics, the more impressed I am. It's really opened up a whole new genre for me.
Yay!
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, it is one of those things where... The schlich... Like... I mean, it sounds perfect in my head, but when I try and make the sound, it doesn't sound right.
I know. Yeah.
But it's like the placement of it where his sword kind of ends up after separating head from body.
Mm.
You know, it's one of those things that it could come across as in a way childish, but it really the sound effects, maybe it's just that I've been reading comics for so long, they never pull me out of the story.
They still feel
very in place. It's like they're part of the art.
Yeah. And like the way they are, like how the sleek slants at an angle and like they're kind of puffy and then there's like a drop shadow at the bottom.
Yes.
Like things like that, you know? It's very impressive.
Yes. And even just to kind of use that idea of if we look at the pairs of Bang Bangs, that really... stretched out A. When I stop and think about it, it helps me think of them as being very percussive. Like a bang, bang. Because that A being right there and in a way the kind of N next to it also stretching down in a point.
I mean, if you have ever recorded stuff and seeing like waves and stuff like that, you'd see when you make a sharp sound, they would shoot up like that on the wave graph thing. Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of get what you mean. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Nice. Comics and creators of comics. This is me, a very greenhorn, a huge greenhorn, telling you that, yay, I like comics.
Yay!
Okay. Yeah, so, next page?
Yeah. So we get the ghost of the Black Pirate, you know, not quite fading away, but kind of. And this page... I feel it kind of, it straddles a fine line, of it's got one foot in sounding like an old fashioned pirate comic, especially with the daughters, the granddaughters dialogue. Mm. So one foot in kind of old-fashioned pirate, and another foot kind of in the, she's Asian, so she talks slightly different. Like, I feel it's doing a little balance act.
Oh.
You know? Like, just
oh,
little bits of turn of phrase, like the, would you kill me too? My grandfather lies dead by their hands. Or maybe I'm just, you know, reading too much into it.
I thank you instead of thank you. I see. Interesting. Huh, I didn't notice that. Thank you for pointing it out. I mean, to give it probably is also to give the place a certain dimension. Mm-hmm. Like this street is very different from the other parts of Opal. And I have just noticed this, but you know that second panel on the right, the second middle panel on the right,
yes,
where she asks him what his name is.
Mm-hmm.
In the background, there's a store, right?
Yeah, it's like...
Do you know what store that is?
You know better than I do. Like, I think I got it. Like, I can't quite tell if it's saying wife or wheat.
It's McDonald's.
Really?
It is. Yeah, it's McDonald's. It's Chinese for McDonald's.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm very impressed.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but...
How do you say, like... I mean, do those characters have, like, a reading that's specific to McDonald's? Or do you say, like, McDonald's?
It's 麦当劳, which is Chinese for McDonald's. In Chinese, we usually... There's a... Well, you know Japanese, so there's a form of katakana, I guess. Katakana, well, I don't know if our listeners know what katakana is, but it's like a syllabary, right? It's a syllabary that represents foreign or borrowed words. And for foreign words or borrowed words, there are certain existing Chinese characters that sort of like match the sounds. Like Mac would be Mai. and da would be dang or something, and lao would be nose, I guess. But it's also sometimes it's also wordplay. There's a lot of wordplay involved. So the way they choose the words is also sometimes it pertains to the meaning as well. So depending on the kanji, depending on the Chinese characters, they might choose another mai or another dang or another lao, because there are so many words with similar readings in Chinese.
Nice.
So yeah, so that's the store of McDonald's is in the background.
I just wanna point out to all listeners, I don't think there's another podcast that would be able to give you that kind of insight. Just saying.
I'm very impressed by this. Who would be in charge of the words behind there? Or who would be, you know, the writer or the
this person? So on when I flip the next page, we can see that, you know, the penciler was Tony Harris, the inker was Wade Von Grobiger, and the letterer was Bill Oakley. I have a feeling it would most likely be one of those three.
Okay.
I can't with certainty say who. Maybe when we're done recording and I post the show, I'll try and use the powers of Twitter to find out. Who knows if there'll be a response. Who knows, honestly? I mean, this is, you know, 96, so this is 20 years ago. So who knows if that knowledge still exists. But it would be nice to know which one of those three would have put in the McDonald's, because it's a really neat little find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, nice.
Moving on?
Mm-hmm.
To Encounters, the true title of the issue on the next page. In addition to the penciler, inker, and letterer we just name-checked, we also have the writer, James Robinson, the colorist, Gregory Wright, the editor, Archie Goodwin, and the assistant editor, Chuck Kim working on this issue, bringing us this fine, fantastic issue.
With the McDonald's.
McDonald's.
Okay. So, this first page, we see, I wouldn't call Jack a philanderer, but we've seen, like, you know, he's at, this is like his second, third. He's quite into these kind of things, like the women and having women and, you know, having women.
Well, you know, to be fair, the women seem to not have too much of a problem with it.
True.
You know.
Yeah. I'm nothing against him having women. I mean, we get to see a naked Jack, but near naked Jack.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, like one of those, those sides of Starman that you, only a reader that's looking in from the inside can be privy to, I think.
So, some things on this page that I think deserve mention, and I think there's several. First, we got the underwear.
Oh,
we got the underwear. Which, you know, does beg the question, Jack's or Lucy's?
Oh, wow.
And then just right above it, you know, I like the fact that it's just enough to be like, yeah, you know what? They were being safe.
Yeah, I know. yeah, I get what you mean. They're being very responsible adults. So you don't have to worry about the young kids who are reading getting the wrong message that, oh, Starman did it unprotected, so I can do it too.
Exactly. And it's a nice little detail that's there without being in your face, that, like, honestly, I don't know how many times I just glossed over that being too distracted by howdy doody.
Yeah, I know, right? But yeah, a lot of detail in this.
Yes.
You know, down to the way the lamp stand looks like a dog on its front paws.
Yes.
Right? And then also the toys in the background and the loud ties. And I'm just like thinking, okay, only Jack can get away with having toys at the back of the what do you call this? The headboard?
No, yeah, it doesn't look like the bedstand, the headboard?
Yeah. When he invites someone over for sexy times.
I mean, look at how Howdy Doody's positioned. At some point, it is hard not to imagine Howdy Doody was accidentally kicking someone in the head. And, you know, I gotta say, as a comic book nerd, I have very seldom found my comic book and you know, geeky paraphernalia. Seldom sets the mood.
Yeah, I know.
You know who's got a complete collection of Ultimate Spider-Man trade paperbacks?
This guy. Oh, wow.
Why don't you, the missus, when we first started dating, not impressed.
Oh my, I'm a bigger nerd than my husband is. He's a physicist. He's now a physics teacher, but he is not a nerd. He doesn't have a fandom, you know. He's very into science, that's it, you know. But me, on the other hand, I'm into so many things. So he's not impressed with the way these things cost money. That's the thing. Yeah, I don't know. So as a woman, I don't know if, you know, I can speak for all women, but
well, I can. If you need me to chime in, just let me know.
Yeah. So I don't know. I I mean, I'm a woman, but I feel a lot more closer to Jack's, you know, personality. And I can't imagine my partner being okay with all these things at the top of the bed. It's not only, like, kind of hideous, but it's also probably expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then again, if they're expensive, it would just kind of, like, flaunt his wealth. Show that he's a stable, reliable breadwinner. I don't know. But yeah, that's the first page.
You know what the scary thing is? I think you and I could probably spend the next half an hour talking just about this one room. But yeah. I'm not sure how much the listeners would enjoy it. You know, if they want to hear more of us talk about Jack's geekdom, then send us a message over on the Facebook site for Comics League International. It's a good place to go.
Okay. We should move on to the next few pages.
Yes, yes.
Which also takes place in the room, but we're not going to talk about the room.
We're going to just, you know, by the way, next panel, when we see Lucy, she is undergarmented. Which leads me to believe...
Alliance Jax!
underneath those white boxers, he likes to feel a little pretty.
Oh.
Just saying. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Mm-mm. Nice. Okay.
So this is a very adult conversation. Like a very mature, like, you know, listen, this is fun, but... you're not grown up enough, and I've got to move my life along.
Right. From Lucy. Lucy said that.
Yeah.
So we can also kind of figure out that Jack is not very competent in the relationships department.
Well, yeah, especially with that line where she's like, you know, you might be a hero, but you're not a nice person. And he's like, so do you want to, like, spend the day together or, you know, spend some time apart? It's like, oh, Jack, you clueless person.
Mm. Yeah. She's like, oh, there's this line that she says, oh, what's that? Like, she basically calls him childish. Where is it? What does she say? Where is it? She calls him... like, your toy, something about your toys.
Oh, you never grow up. You're lucky that you look younger than your age.
So yeah,
that doesn't
mean
you don't have to start acting it.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's very hurtful.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was a really nice way of writing it, I think. So props to the writers. Mm. Like, in that one sentence, it was able to tell us his penchant for these old things and his personality and what she thinks of him. So I think that's very good writing there.
It's a nice little higher wire act of how can you have a character completely put down your main character for his kind of obvious in retrospect personality flaws. Without making that new character appear unlikable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because, I mean, really all she does in the scene is tell him he's a child and he needs to grow up. Kind of, you know, slaps a little bit of reality on his face and then says bye. And at the end of the scene, I bear her no ill will. I wish her the best. Like, you know, she's probably got a point.
Yep. So I guess the writers wanted us to see this side of him as well. Right? That's why they put it in here.
Yeah.
So
do we need, before we kind of move on, do we need to touch on the fact that this is an interracial relationship?
Oh, okay. Yes, it is an interracial relationship. I kind of like didn't really notice that. Interracial relationship. I think it has to be recognized, but I'm just one of those people who are.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I don't think we need to necessarily make a big deal of it, other than, I guess I'm kind of saying, like, I think there were, you know, a decent amount of people. I mean, still probably even today, but in 96, there are definite people who, who this would have been like, what, Starman's dating a black girl? That's not right.
I see.
You know, God bless message boards, but sometimes when diversity is even slightly put in comics, there are some people who do take it as a personal affront.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So,
I guess really nice job on the writer's part or for putting it right here, like, in the most nonchalant way possible, you know? Okay. Yes. Good job. Like, I think, you know, Starman, we've seen stuff like that, you know, minorities being represented or minority groups being given, like, special shout-outs like that. So, very nice.
True. But you know what? Honestly, now that we're just straight up kind of talking about it, I'm trying to think back in my head of if there has been, like, even a strong secondary character who's been a minority. I mean, I haven't thought about it before, so it's possible we just kind of glossed over it. And I definitely know we've seen people of color and alternative lifestyles kind of showcased in this comic without judgment, or without seeing as odd. But out of our, you know, main cast, the closest we get right now is a blue person.
I see. True. Huh.
But, you know, I mean, that's... I don't know. I hate to just brush it over by saying that's not really, you know, not necessarily what I think we're looking at when we examine the comic. But it, when I stop and think, it's kind of like, oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember as well. I mean, it's still a big deal, you know, when you know, you get someone of color in a title role of anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's not a movie just based on, like, a certain group. Like, you know, if it were like the movie Joy Luck Club, it makes sense for everyone to be Asian, for them to be Chinese.
Yeah.
You know, but to have someone like, what's that word? Ensemble cast? You know, to have an ensemble cast and then having a someone of color to be in that that limelight.
It's less rare to have something like the show Elementary, where which is, you know, a take on Sherlock Holmes, where the Watson character is Joan Watson, being played by Lucy Liu. And, you know, her ethnicity does not really factor into the show. It's which, you know, I enjoy when there's kind of the seamless diversity. I feel like I'm going far afield. Maybe it's the fever talking.
No problem. We can come back to Starman.
Yes. So, back at the hospital, Ted and Grundy are talking.
Yes. Okay.
I'm going to be quiet and let you talk through it a little bit.
No. Okay. So at this in this scene, we get to see. I get to see this history of Grundy being a super violent villain, and I did not see that coming. I mean, I kind of knew that Grundy was, like, bad on the other side. Before he came into the Starman story, you know, before the sewer scene, but I didn't expect there to be such a past for Grundy, and I had no idea that Ted was linked to it. So having Ted say, like, you know, you are not the person that you were before, and I can't really blame you for that, I think. It's, and you know, he says, on that, like, two pages covering that one scene. Mm-hmm. And at the end he says he's so torn because I guess this was the guy who killed people he knew, you know, who killed, probably, it could have been even his friend, you know, like the guy, Skyman, who almost became Starman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and to know that Grundy was behind that killing, it's like, Grundy, really sweet, cute, the butterfly play, Grundy. Yeah, so that was really shocking for me. And also all the tidbits of history being thrown in, like Skyman and Alan. Who's Alan? I don't know.
Original Green Lantern.
Oh, okay. So I'm guessing Ted, that he's referring to that group of the Band of Brothers who came and helped.
The Justice Society.
Justice Society, thank you. So, yeah, and I guess Grundy must have gone through something. Like Ted says here that, you know, something must have done is, like, you're a new person each time the swamp reforms you. So here I get clued in to Grundy being associated with a swamp. It must have some, like, chemical thingy, some, you know, he's a plant or something, right? So, That gives me a bit more insight to his lore, to his origins. Yeah, so a very informative couple of pages. And I like, you know, the thing about comic books, again and again, I'm very impressed by the storytelling, the way they employ a certain character to say something, to introduce, you know, like, basically function as a plot dump, but not in a boring way. Yeah. So that's my take on these two pages.
No, exactly. I mean, this is roughly a two-page in-story Wikipedia article of who is Solomon Grundy and what personal connection does he have to Starman? Mm-hmm. And we're told why it matters in such an artistic way. Mm. And every time, like, Ted's body posture, the kind of... He just looks so still and so contemplative.
Mm.
Very professorial.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just, on that very final panel, I am so torn. Mm. I mean, we're two different people, so I'm sure the emotion we're putting on it in our own heads is very different. But it's such a powerful line, and combining it with the just very, like, sad, broken-hearted, I mean, very childlike face of Grundy. Mm-hmm. It's very heartbreaking. Which, you know, I've never cried while reading Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least very seldom, very seldom.
Mm-hmm.
But this was just so well done, like you said.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you, Starman people.
Thank you. And then we turn the page, and just, I don't know, because of the layout, because of the colorings, it feels like we've opened things up so much.
Mm-mm.
Or at least that was my thought of, like, the hallway and the distance. Everything seems brighter and cleaner.
Yeah. It's a hospital. Mm. But the lift in the background, it's one of those, like, old-fashioned ones.
Yes.
I really like it. It's, like, for it to be in a hospital, I think it's, like, really nice touch. Very Opal City. Mm. One of these things, you know, it's very consistent, things.
And honestly, I did not notice this until you drew my attention to the lift, but the fact that the doctors are having to walk down 5 stairs... and there's someone with a wheelchair in the back who has to use the lift, the elevator, is somehow just perfect. It's like, what do you want? Yeah. It's an old building.
So this page, we learn that dun, dun, dun. Mikal, he speaks English.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really like the almost overly goofball Hey, everyone, come on in. I like it. I like it.
Mm. Yeah. Nice. Very nice. So, that's the end of that bit, though. We don't know what's going to happen until next time.
Yes. Because when we turn the page, we get a very, very shadowy Jack and a very, very shadowy Charity in the middle of their talks.
Mm. He's getting his fortune told.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think this first page, in a way the first two pages, are more of just like filling in blank spaces and kind of connecting threads to this DC world and the DC world at large. You know, like, for example, Zatara. There is absolutely no reason for a current DC reader to really know anything about Zatara.
Okay.
But once you've kind of been drinking the Kool-Aid for a while, it's like, oh, hey, neat. Wait a minute, but he's been dead for a while. What does that mean? Like, and I have no idea if that comes into a plot again, but it's kind of like, she has connections to the superhero world? What?
Oh. Okay. I don't know who Zatara is.
So
when I read it, I didn't get it.
Yeah, and it's really, you have no reason. I don't think you, in this comic, you ever have any reason to know. My mic might have been really low for the last little bit. I turned it down to cough, so if you didn't hear me saying Zatara is an old DC character, sorries. Yeah. Fever. But yeah, there's no reason for people to know who Zatara is. We're already in an hour. I kind of feel like we need to step up our pace. Goodness.
Okay, let's do it. That's
my fault.
Okay.
My fault.
No problem.
Few little things. This second page is again just like in Charity's last real appearance, is just kind of sprinkling in little clues of what to expect. The only thing that I think is kind of really worth playing big notice on most of the panels is the idea of the Winged Man, which was originally a reference to Hawkman, but then during this whole timeline, the character of Hawkman had his existence really muddled up by continuity. And I've heard that because of that muddling of continuity, I think it was kind of just come into the idea of like, yeah, maybe he's not the best character to bring into this anymore.
Anything I see.
Struck your fancy?
Well, the cat. the cat really made the connection for me to the cover. And the way it pounces. By the way, I'm talking about the cat at the last
the last
row of panels. So made the connection to the cover, and the way it's moving, the way it pounces, I guess, I don't know, I feel like the entire the feeling of the leaves are falling. Yeah, and that kind of like makes me, there's this mood to this. Like, where are the leaves coming from? You know, and where are they? And why is there a cat? And why does the cat look like it's pouncing from a puddle?
Yeah.
It's things like that. And one of those random, yet it seemed to have a hidden meaning that only the artist would know. I really enjoy like these touches, the things that only comic books can do. So
yes,
nice, very nice.
They do a great job of breaking up what could just be two talking heads.
Yeah.
That is visually interesting.
Yes, exactly. So really nice. Yeah. Okay. So then everything turns bright, and then Charity and Jack are in the main hall of her abode. And then I think you talked about this in the synopsis, but basically Jack asks her out and she says no.
Yeah. Well, how about friends, huh?
Yeah. And then she agrees to a movie?
Yeah.
Mm.
Please.
I was going to say, Charity's a pretty cool person. Yeah. I like her. Mm.
My question was going to be, do you think Jack is being sincere with his, then we could just be friends. You're not interested. Or do you think there's a part of him that's still kind of going like, once we go see a movie, I'll take her to see Humphrey Bogart. You know?
I don't know. I think Jack is actually one of those people who falls in love very quickly. He's like, I don't know if he even knows what falling in love means. He probably like, suddenly when he feels a little bit of fondness for a person, he would immediately like, oh, maybe this can be something. And then he kind of latches onto it. He's that kind of person.
All I can add is that sounds perfect.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So it's not, I don't think he really has an, he has a very I think he neither has an ulterior motive or he is pure of heart. It's just, you know, Jack being like, oh, I like this person. You know, yeah. So
I like it. And then we get on the next page, we get Shade and the O'Dares.
Oh, yes.
And their guns.
Oh, this one. We don't know why or where they're going.
Yeah.
But we learn that Clarence is not in on the plan.
Didn't tell him. He doesn't know what we're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, if anything happens, we want Clarence to keep the family name going because he has a better chance of doing so. And I was like, what are you guys, Asian? so it's like, but okay, I get it. O'Dares, and you know.
It's a very Chinese name.
I wonder what O'Dare would be in Chinese.
I will leave that up to you and back away.
Dear. I think. Might be that, I don't know. I wonder if there are Chinese translations of these things. There has to be somewhere.
There might be.
Mm.
Neat.
Somewhere in the world, a group of Chinese Diamond fanboys or girls would be, oh, they put McDonald's in the picture! You know, because
that would be
they...
awesome.
Yeah. No. Okay. And then?
No, that's way too much of a tangent. Never mind. So, Jack's getting a haircut. And, you know, it's a nice little haircut, but again, it's just, I like these little pages where it's kind of, here's what else is going on when he's not being a superhero, and it's just all about him thinking about moving into a new building.
And yeah.
Insurance and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Rotten plaster. While he gets a haircut.
Yeah, but, you know, he says it's the most beautiful place.
Which goes back to what you were saying. He saw it, didn't really think about it, but he just felt that attachment and was like, I'm in love.
Yeah, his heart's a flutter. He said that. Yeah, so the thing is, with things, I think, for Ted, once he finds that, you know, once he puts in an emotional investment, he can get his hands on it as long as he has enough money, as long as he has, you know, he bargains hard enough with all his knickknacks. And, but with people, that doesn't apply. So.
Oh, yeah, with Jack?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was Ted, sorry. Yeah. No, so, yeah, that's why. So, okay. Barber finishes with the barber.
Mm-hmm. Heads outside with his not too fruity cologne. And. Almost immediately, boom. Hello, Sadie.
Sadie. She's the one, right? She's the one whom he met at Charity's place, right?
Yeah.
Who's like, he said like, something like she was premenstrual or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is the third time they've bumped into each other.
Right. First was the circus and then Charity's place and then now outside pub. And then we don't know what happens because...
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping that the next issue or so gets us, like, what happened next. Because it seems like there should have been a follow-up to that, but instead, when we change the page to two characters who don't, you know, these two characters don't seem overly impressed with each other, we get Mr. Wu and Clarence O'Dare.
Yeah. Clarence O'Dare's boss, I guess? This guy? Yeah. Smoking a cigar. Yeah. And he is asking Clarence whether, you know, the police should be on board with a Starman or not, right?
Yeah.
So, and over here, Mr. Wu throws in a lot of, I would say, trivia about the other cities.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was very educational. Again, nice plot dump. Nice yes. use of the character to say this. Yeah, to educate people like me. I don't have a clue, but I know Gotham. I know that means Batman. Yep. So, yeah. I see that there's a, you know, these things where on the very, what is this word, administrative side of Opal as well, you know, how different systems kind of come together. They have to run parallel to each other, not just, you know, the strata where there's like all the superheroes and then the consults, which are like, to me, Shade and Charity. They are kind of like very important people who kind of move the story. They know things. They know things outside of the cognition of these main characters because yes. of their powers, right? And then, you know, you have this group of people, and then you have this group of people who are interested in Opal as a city, you know, the mm-hmm. politicians, the police, the civil servants. And I think that's very yes. fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have an insight to this. And Clarence, you said in your synopsis, he gets a promotion, right?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
So he gets what promotion again? What's that?
He is what, the superhero liaison?
Right.
Well, or at least that's the implication.
Yeah.
Because now that I really look at it, so Clarence, what's your answer? And we don't actually get if he says yes or no, do we?
Oh no! True.
I screwed up the synopsis. Cut everything and start true. Over from the beginning.
No. I think he does get it. I mean, there's no reason why. I mean, he gave advice to say, we are going to get on board, and you should too, and...
Yeah.
Yeah. It just sounds perfect.
Yes, yes. And I really got a second pretty much everything you said. Throughout this series, we get James Robinson doing a great job of connecting lines from this stories to the outside DC world, from the outside DC world to this one, and then kind of interweaving in politics and just city life of Opal City in a way where it feels very organic. And that's a real skill.
I enjoy that so much, you know, building a universe with its own government and its own politics is really difficult.
Yes.
Yeah.
And all the while, the entire art team, Harris, Grobiger, Wright, really keep this a visually interesting world. Kudos.
Yeah, so much kudos.
And okay. You know what else is visually interesting?
The fight scene?
Cops and demons fighting!
Yes! Oh, this end was like a... It yes. blew my mind. I know, I really like the end to this issue.
Yeah.
Because it has Shade in it. Okay, no.
But it's a great... Go.
No, I was waiting. I was going to say, like, I want to, like, jump right into the part where... You know, he gets sucked into the poster. But...
Let's do it. Because we get...
Okay.
Other than to say, I like the idea that Robinson kind of did the whole, yeah, don't worry, we're going to explain all this, but let's get to our kind of cliffhanger. I just like that. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. The way that they are being sucked into the vortex as well.
Yeah.
And how we kind of just have narration going over the thing for a couple of pages. And then we have the dialogue, right?
Yes.
That was very, that was a great technique to really make things very fast paced.
Yes.
You know, to let us feel like see the action through the pictures and feel like, okay, we can't spend time on every dialogue. We're just going to like tell you what's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah. Give you the answer straight. And then bam, we have, oh no, Matt. Yeah, I remember his name now. Matt being sucked into the vortex, the poster. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. And I like that he's, in a way, he's doing it for redemption.
Mm.
Even though, in a way, like no one knows about his crimes. Like he's doing it as a, you know, at this point, he's doing it as a personal redemption rather than kind of like, oh no, the ball's gonna fall on him and his secrets will be told. He's like, nope, I gotta do this for me, in a way.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah, for his like so-called redemption, right? Mm. And did you notice that the Shade had his hat tied
on? Yes!
Like a bonnet!
I love it. I love it that someone came up with, someone made the point, whether it was Tony Harris noticing or someone else just kind of looked and said, if there's a lot of wind pulling people in, how come Shade's hat didn't get sucked in? There you go, ribbon.
Yeah, this isn't some kind of like 16th, 17th century fashion statement, right? I'm clueless as to how people kept their hats on, so...
I will let our 16th and 17th century fashionistas send an email.
Yay! Okay. Yeah, so here we find out the name, Scalp Hunter.
Yes.
Yeah, and then we get some names thrown in. Brian Savage, son of Matt Savage.
And I think these have come up, like, here and there in the past issues.
Yeah, Savage, I remember. Scalp Hunter, maybe it's just slipped my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
so, oh, sorry.
Oh,
go
please,
ahead.
Please.
And we basically have, like, a lineage. You know, this guy and you know, it reminds me of Numbers from the Bible. He begot... This guy begot this guy, and this guy begot this guy. So, over here we find out that Shade and Matt's past incarnations.
We're friends.
Yeah. So that's a very. I'm really interested to see what happens after this because. And can I move on to the last page?
Please.
Because the Shade follows him in.
Oh, it's great.
I know. I did not see that. I did not see that coming. Because over here, we have Matt saying goodbye and saying, like, okay, Shade, you gotta have to take care of things for me. Mm-hmm. You know, take care of, what is it, my brother's sister or something. And then Shade just goes into the poster as well.
Yeah, and it's in that whole second to last page is just Shade kind of saying, you know, doing this is really very unlike me. And then he does it, and it's a perfect ending of the two fools, which calls back to the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just them and the poster, and it's a great piece of art, and it's the devil and Cthulhu mixed.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea what Cthulhu is.
Oh, goodness. That'll be a completely different podcast.
Okay. But, you know, it's like, I think over here, if Shade did not have the confidence to know that he would be able to come back, he wouldn't have gone in.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
And I like how we are kind of seeing Shade dealing with deep friendship. Even though it's not real, it's kind of between the lines, that's what he's doing.
Mm-mm-mm.
He's a softy.
Yeah. And, you know, scenes like that, it really gives me the feeling of insurance. Like, I have bought insurance in, like, when it comes to characters that I like, I've told you this before, that, oh, they can't die because they're the, you know, they have to exist to provide more information or to move the plot along, so...
Yes.
I'm not very worried about these two fools.
Well, I'm going to keep my mouth shut about their futures. I have read ahead, as listeners know. And instead, I'm just going to ask the question, where can they find you on the internet, Lydia?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook, and, you know, a little less frequently now on YouTube. My username is Quek Channel, Q-U-E-K, Channel. Quek is my family name, in case you're wondering. I'm very Chinese. That's how I know Chinese. And yeah, so that's where you can find me. How about you, Brent? Where can I find you?
You can find me at a hodgepodge of places. You can find me on Twitter at Dead Troubadour, TROUBADOUR. That's a long word. You can go to my main page, which is deadlytroubadour.com. The easiest way to find me is to probably to track me down on Facebook, either at my author page of Brent Thomas, or to go to the Comics League International page. Of course, if you're listening to this show through iTunes, Comics League International, then, you know, take a moment to like and share and tell your friends about the goodness that is this show. If you want to help me pay for it all, go to Patreon, patreon.com/Brent Thomas. That's way too many places. I gotta get everything succinct.
Okay, no problem. One day you will be able to consolidate everything.
Yes. That's all for this week. We are going to go on a little mini hiatus. We're going to do 2 weeks. We're going to Comics League International is going to bring you some commentary episodes featuring my good friend and author Derek Adams, and we're going to talk about Willow, the fantasy classic. During that 2 week interim, Lydia and I are going to be hard at work in the studios recording several episodes of Starman.
Whew. All right.
Thank you, Lydia.
Thank you, Brent. Thank you, guys out there who are listening, and girls too.
Yes.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.